This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 299, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy listeners like you.
You can't live with them, and you can't live without them. There's something irresistible-ish about them. We grin and bear it, cause the nights are long, but I hope that something better comes along. It's no good complaining, it's pointless to holler. If she's a beauty, then she'll get underneath your collar. If she made a monkey out of old King Kong, then I hope that something better comes.
Hey, and welcome to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 299. It's insane. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And we are from the website ifanboy.com, which is a website dedicated to comic books and all the great things that has to do with comic books. And every week comic books come out and we read a stack of books. And then one of us has the duty of finding that one issue that was the most enjoyable read for him that particular week and deem it the pick of the week. It goes to ifanboy.com and writes a review of it. And then we come back here to discuss it, as well as all the other books that came out and what you thought of the books and comics, esoterica in general. It's just a fun time. Before we dive into the show, a couple of things. First off, we're going to be talking about what happens in the book. So we might spoil what occurs in the pages therein. So if you haven't read your books yet and you want to be surprised as you read them, you might want to press pause, come back, listen after you've read them, or, you know, take the risk. You never know what you might find out.
Live on the edge.
Exactly. Also, you might have heard earlier in the show, about 45 seconds ago, I said that this is episode 299, which is insane. And that means episode 300 is next week. And so Woo-hoo! Stay tuned to the end of the show. We're going to talk about the plans for episode 300. And hopefully you will enjoy what we've got planned. But that said, Connor, you had the pick. And it's a dark world you and Jason Aaron live in, isn't it?
Well, I did not expect to make Wolverine 14 my pick of the week.
I did not expect it either.
Not at all. Because this arc, this is all about faith in the creator. Faith in a creator like Jason Aaron. Because this arc, up until this issue, I was not really enjoying. And I had really enjoyed all of Jason Aaron's Wolverine work, his Weapon X series and his Wolverine series. But this particular arc has found Wolverine seeking revenge on this shadowy group called the Red Right Hand, who sent him to hell in the previous arc and who possessed his body in the previous arc.
They've been screwing with him for the past 2 years in the book.
Right. Yeah. So he's now he's had enough. He's searching them out. He's found their compound. As he's fighting his way through their compound, each issue in the series has been one story where Wolverine's fighting some random thug we've never heard of before and killing them brutally, and then while that's going on, we learned about the Red Hand. And it got really repetitive, and it got really kind of boring and kind of video gamey. And so I was really looking forward to this issue, not because I wanted to find out what happened, but mostly I just wanted to move on to the next story arc. I wanted to get this over with. So, of course, we come to find out in this issue that, and this is, again, spoiler warning if you haven't read this story, that not only has the Red Right Hand created this ingenious plot to get revenge on Wolverine where they all kill themselves so that he can't get his revenge by killing them, but they leave him a folder with information showing him that the people he just spent 6 months in our time killing were his illegitimate kids from his around the world from his lifetime spent, you know, carousing. And all of a sudden, that revelation changed the entire arc. You now look back on it, and you've been for 5 months. You've been watching Wolverine brutally murder his children, and without knowing it, it was the classic Sixth Sense moment where he's, "Oh my God, he's a ghost!" It changes your whole perception of what you've been reading, and it immediately made me go back and reassess everything. Because whereas before it was repetitive and boring, and oh, he's fighting somebody else, now it's tragic and awful. And
that's quite a leap to take creatively. I know I'm not even being facetious, but like you know, you had to stick with it for a while for the payoff. I mean, it was a couple issues of it or something like that.
It was five. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it was very much the, you know, the he gets into the compound and there's a video of the leader starts playing back and goes, "Well, if you found this, we're dead, and you know, we got a revenge on you, and here's why," and explains everything that happened. And it's one of those, you know, make sense of the last, you know, four or five, whatever many issues it's been. But man, did it pack a punch. And Connor, do you remember when you talked to Jason Aaron at WonderCon and he said that he was going to take Wolverine to some dark places?
He was not fooling around with that.
No, he was not.
It was dark for him and for me at the same moment. I read that panel where it's revealed and I was like, "Oh, holy shit." And just, you had to put the book down and stop for a second because this is awful. Even for a guy like Wolverine who's had a lot of awful in his life and been through a lot of stuff, and that's kind of his shtick, is he shoulders the burden that no one else can, but this is a burden even too much for him.
Yeah.
And the next arc is about his mental breakdown. So I think
this is the kind of comics that Grant Morrison was looking for more of, right?
Yes, exactly. So as a single issue, it was fantastic, but as an emotional wallop, it was fantastic. As a book that changed the way I perceived the whole previous half a year of Wolverine comics, it was fantastic. This was basically Jason Aaron, you know, playing, marionetting us around with his strings and doing it masterfully. And as a book this week, there's a lot of books to like this week, but as the best book, this was clearly it. I mean, there was no contest.
And was it a matter? I mean, at what point did it was it the reveal? Was it that?
Yeah, it was the reveal. I mean, yeah. It was still up until that point where we learned about the final member. He is a kid in the group, and his mother was the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that Wolverine killed in an Enemy of the State. And and you're like, okay, fine, that's sad, whatever. And then the whole group Jonestowns themselves, and that's, all right, well, now he can't kill them, okay. But then it's the reveal in the folder that really did it. It was really the Bruce Willis is a ghost moment, which it happens a lot now, but when it's done really well, it really, really works. And this was done really well because there was no inkling of this whatsoever.
No, yeah, there was no. That's like, as I was reading the issue, when they killed them, I'm like, they're killing themselves, really? Like, that's the, you know, like the kind of Heaven's Gate kind of, you know, like mass suicide type thing. And I didn't see it coming at all. And then, like, and as soon as I, like, it's funny because the way the page, the page is laid out was that, you know, he's watching the video and they give a folder, like a folder on all the people that he's killed and their relations, and it goes through and you see Wolverine just saying, oh, this can't be true. And then that one, those three panels of showing the dead people that he killed, and you're like, oh, well, that guy kind of has sharp teeth. And like, I was looking for the visual connections that I didn't pick up on.
Yep.
And yeah, they're there, and it's just, oh man, it's brutal.
And also then you find, I didn't mention this in the review, but the final scene is the Red Hand in hell.
Yeah.
And they're all reunited with their loved ones, because for the most part the loved ones were bad people.
Yeah.
And but except for the kid. The kid's in hell because he murdered people, but his mother's not, because she was a good person. So the final sort of nail in the coffin is this little kid who was trying to get revenge for his mother and is now eternally separate from her. Man. So it was, on many, many levels, it was Jason Aaron, Wolverine. It was Jason Aaron just smacking us around with his words and feelings.
And beer.
And he proves every month why he's one of the best writers in comics.
Yeah, and the thing is that he's doing it in a way that's tied into what other people have done before him. I mean, like, part of it is that a lot of the information and leads that they get on Wolverine come from Dokken.
Mm-hmm.
Wolverine's son who hates him, and that's been clear that Dokken's been out for Wolverine as well, and so you get a page of background through the kid's eyes when the meeting, the Red Right Hand are meeting with him, and he says, you know, I've given you everything you need, all you just got to do is, you know, go do with it, and you know, so it's like, it's not out of nowhere, it's not not premeditated, you know what I mean? Like, it ties in with everything that's been going on for the past couple of years in and out of what Aaron's been doing with Wolverine, so.
He's clearly telling a grand Wolverine story through the course of this book and his previous Wolverine book. It's been fantastic.
Yeah.
So. And the best thing is it redeemed the past five issues, which for me were a letdown. And I even turned someone onto the book because of the previous arc, and she was like, this current story is really boring. And I was like, I'm really sorry. and
she, you Wolverine, you Iron Man 2.0'd her.
Yeah, but now, you know, this whole thing, it sort of redeems the whole story and proves that Jason Aaron really has something fantastic going on.
Yeah, and like you said, it comes down to trusting the creator. And it's like, yeah. and I mean, I don't think we've seen Jason Aaron really not deliver yet, you know, on something like this. So, I mean, so that trust is deserved. And it's good to see that it was earned again with this arc. Yeah, this is brutal. This was one of those where I turned the page. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, and that's something great when you have a stack of books and you're reading a lot of things you've read before, and there's lots of things happening that are fun. But when it can really get you, when you find yourself shaking your fist in impotent rage at the creator, then you know you've got something.
You got another thing going on there than I did with my comics.
In impotent rage, I like that. But
so I think Connor was having a bad weekend, so he's like, I'll get some comics, I guess. But he's still angry.
So if you are, I think if you've been following these Wolverine books like Ron and I have from the beginning of Wolverine Weapon X, then you probably, this was a good issue. And then people on the site, you know, who have been, had the same reaction we did. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Just a gut punch.
Oh, total gut punch. And well done. I mean, like, I haven't been a big fan of Renato Geddes. How do you feel about the art?
I've liked him in other books. I don't think he's been great for this book, but I think he's sort of grown. It's growing on you because it's been around so long.
Yeah.
So
I mean, this is definitely a case where the story. I mean, the art was almost secondary to what happened. You know, I mean, like it served the story. It got it across, but
it served it. It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It just wasn't. You know, it wasn't like it was Garney or somebody like that.
But. Yeah. Yeah.
So he did do a good job of showing the anguish on his face.
You know, that last page, the full page of the aha, it's brutal.
Wolverine falling to his knees.
I just don't know where you take it from here. Apparently, I guess the next issue goes back to the Canadian wilderness, so we'll see about that. Oh,
Bender.
Brutal.
He's going to return to his roots. Oh, now, Josh, Batman Gates of Gotham also ended this week.
Yeah, I'd say it's sort of a different story than what you described with your book that you're talking about. Gates of Gotham, I thought, started out really strong, really interesting concept. It was all the way through, and I sort of stuck with it the whole time because I wanted that payoff.
Yeah, I mean, and again, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
I think you can trace the arc of this to start off with Scott Snyder plotting with Kyle Higgins, who was doing the script, and then it became Kyle Higgins plotting, and then it became somebody else doing the writing completely. So it just
four issues.
Five
issues, right?
Well, we've seen what's going on at DC. We all know that.
Yeah. So, and then they had to rush to finish it, and the artist changed a little bit. And did Batman always have these weird ear things?
What ear?
In the whole series, like if you look at they dug in some his cowl.
That
showed up in this issue.
An artistic choice.
And he's got, did he even have them all through the series?
I don't know. I don't know.
I was like, wait a minute, which Batman am I looking at here? And then, he's got those late '90s shoulder things.
That happens in a lot of the artists. But
I know,
this is just Exhibit A of the shit we're rebooting in September. We got to get these books done, and you had Graham Nolan doing the layouts.
Yeah,
you had the Trevor McCarthy, who's been the artist except for that last issue where Dustin Gwynn. There's been 18 people working on this miniseries.
Yeah, and the thing is that it seems like it's important. Like I have a feeling
it is important. If you saw the Scott Snyder interview I did with San Diego, all of his stuff's going to be referenced in the new Batman world.
But I think you made the complaint before at one point that there was just you couldn't know who they were talking about with the characters, and even the big reveal about who the villain was, I was like, wait, who's that again? Because it was just so long ago. Like maybe you would read better as a trade or something like that. But overall, it wasn't awful. I don't even want to give that off, but it was just like, okay, that was
no.
There.
I don't think it was bad. I don't think it was bad.
But
at
it should have been fantastic.
Yes.
Like it should have been. This should be exactly my favorite thing.
This was up our alley, and it didn't deliver
in a big way. So that's a little disappointing, I suppose. I don't like to give that kind of review, but that's how it is. Then over at
Marvel, what else disappointed you this week, Josh?
First of all, I'm not the audience for an Ultimates book. I'm just not. That's fine. That's fair. But Ultimates number one came out. Is this the fourth? Maybe fifth?
Yeah, I think it's volume four.
You're checking the Indicia. Hang on.
I liked it a lot better than the Jeff Loeb one.
Yeah,
I tell you that much.
Yeah.
I wrote a review, an early review of this on iFanboy.com, and this is Jonathan Hickman taking over the Ultimates, and it's a fine sort of world-threatening view of who where the Ultimates are at, as sort of centered by Nick Fury and his. It was, you know what it felt like? It felt a little like Nick Fury as Samaritan from that first Astro City.
Stuff's coming up, dealing with prioritizing what the threats are around the world, and that's the one thing that really got me from reading it was that it was all over the place, but not in a bad way, like not in a confusing way, just like there were multiple theaters of action.
Well, it was Nick Fury at the office.
Yeah, exactly.
Which makes your day job seem much, much less stressful.
It feels a lot like my day job, actually.
I enjoyed the crap out of this.
Yeah, me too.
This was totally fun. This reminded me of why I loved the Ultimate line so much when it first started, in that it's fast-paced, slam-bang action that I don't have to worry about 30 years of continuity for. I don't even have to worry about previous 10 years of continuity. This is all just there. I haven't been reading all the Ultimate books. I read a couple here and there, but I haven't been keeping up, so I don't really know. And I enjoyed the crap out of this.
Yeah, this very much felt like the 10 years ago when the Ultimate started, that initial Miller Hitch run, where you get this idea of it's bigger than any of us. It's just that this is it's on this grand scale, this world scale, and that a lot of shit's going on, and that these are the people who are going to deal with it. And you got that sense, and Hickman, I think Hickman balanced, it's a different kind of story than we're used to from Jonathan Hickman, I think, with this, because I wouldn't say it wasn't as cerebral as his other stuff. It was more, kind of action oriented, but it had that underpinnings of political intrigue, as well as the seeds of something big. Like I'm infinitely, I was infinitely curious from the first page, just that dude with the headgear thing and that big round built, what is that? You know, and instantly, in the first page, it had me, kind of out of curiosity.
Space cock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I didn't have to think that. And then again, I'm telling you, the 2-page title card on Hickman books, I'm loving. I don't know why.
He gets full page rate for that?
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's kind of, I saw that and I was like,
Oh, come on. You're just fucking with us now.
I know. But I
think
like
he's
that.
Just fucking with you specifically, Ron.
But no, but I really liked it. I love the silent sequence in Asgard, which I thought was great with Captain Britain, who is now Jamie Braddock, who we all know from, you know, who from the regular Marvel universe is Captain Britain's crazy brother, and so is he going to be crazy?
We don't all know.
Well, most Marvel fans know, you know, are aware of that. But that whole silent sequence was fantastic. The drinking bear. Ribic told that those two pages, like, you, even though you didn't know any, you couldn't hear anything, what was going on, you knew exactly what the you filled in the blanks.
My favorite part of the book. Yeah, I really liked the conflict of the sort of drunken, raging Viking Asgardians versus the sort of buttoned down British, you know,
yeah,
superhero guard. And I think that's a really neat conflict. That's Western society right there, yep, in a nutshell.
Yep.
And that was a really fun part of it. I mean, my problem with the Ultimates has always been I don't really like the Ultimates, like the characters. I don't like the characters from this world very much for whatever reason. It's the same reason that, you know, we talked about with Ultimate Captain America. Was that Aaron?
It was Aaron.
You know, great series, really well written, really well done, interesting all the way through. But at the end of the day, I just don't like that character.
Right.
And I don't like him as a bit of a story, but I just wouldn't want to hang out with him.
Right.
So it's just a different thing, I think.
Yeah.
Which is good. It should be different than the regular Avengers book.
Tell you what I didn't like was the cover. Oh, God. These Carrie Andrews covers are awful.
Just I thought it was a trading card. I was like, what's this giant trading card?
I really don't understand what the thing was, is that really it's the Ultimates and the X-Men covers that are the worst. The Spider-Man one and the Hawkeye one are fine. And I don't know if it's because it's groups versus single subjects or not, but I don't know. But
they're really sticking to this Ultimate Comics sort of ethos and in design, and it's really
The Ultimate covers have been bad since day one.
Yep, they have. Yeah.
They're gonna.
So I don't even care anymore. I don't even notice.
No, I know. But this was I was like, oh, this is brutal. But whatever. And while Josh, I know you didn't agree, but the Rivik is fantastic.
I don't think it's bad. It's just not my thing.
Right.
And it's fine. The one thing about it that I tend to not like is, I think occasionally that sort of photorealistic style looks a little stiff. And I just
I don't find this photorealistic.
I don't find this photorealistic at all. Like, I don't understand where that's coming from.
No, not even a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I get painted and photorealistic a little mixed up, but I don't really like that painted style either.
It's not painted either.
It's not painted at all.
It's like faux painting.
No, Dean White colored it.
It's not even close. I'm perplexed by that description.
Yeah, I mean, and don't get me wrong, Josh, I have a hard time describing the style as well, because it's realistic, but it's not photorealistic, but in that it's not cartoony, you know what I mean? Like, I think I kind of know what you mean, but then, you know,
it's slightly painterly, more than the flat colors. If you look around, it's kind of got, it looks like little brush strokes around, like, Nick Fury's head. Like, there's a digital painting thing going on there.
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, but the thing is, I do see, like, every now and then I do get one panel from Rivik, like the last panel of the last page with the bulging Nick Fury eye. You know, like every now and then those kind of make me, you know, a couple pages before, there's a guy working with Nick Fury who's screaming and his eyes are kind of bulging. Like, there's something going on there with the way he draws faces and things like that.
Oh, yeah. I see that.
Yeah.
Looking right at it.
But, I don't know. I mean, I think I kind of see, I mean, especially with the shot of Thor after Captain Britain pours out the drink, I can see kind of where you'd see some of the painting thing, but I don't know. It's just, he's really, really unique, and maybe it's because I loved him on X-Force previously, and so, like, this coming out of that, this is just giving me more stuff. And him work him and Dean White are, like, and I talked to Jonathan Hickman on Don't Miss, and he said that they surpassed his expectations, and I think as a team, a penciler colorist team, that this is, like, if this is the look of the book, I'm in.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But if it's not for you, that's fine. To each their own. But I do know an artist who is for you, who is up your alley. That's Steve Epting.
Steve Epting is Steve Epting today, not Steve Epting before.
Well, yes, yes.
But yeah, it's good to have Steve Epting back. Jonathan Hickman again is going to get some more lip service. This is better than it was.
Those last couple issues with the Black Bolt story were not, how do I put this? Not what I expected. Okay. How's that? Is that a nice?
Well, I mean, I think that one of the things that happens, and this is the monthly comic.
Yep.
Risk. Risk isn't the right word, but challenge. You know, we had a story going.
It's a downside to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a story going where there was a shitload of villains, and there were a shitload of Reeds, and they were all in an apartment.
Yep.
Well, the reads weren't all there, but you get the point. And everyone wanted to know what was going to happen. And then we got some weird, you know, Black Bolt Inhuman stuff out in space that even I was like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, he had to explain how he got Black Bolt into the story. I get that. I mean, like, it took the light away from the, it took the spotlight away from the thing that I was really interested in and, right. you know, and distracted, which I get because he had to explain how he got Black Bolt here. That's the challenge and it's fine. The art was a little, and we're not talking about we're talking about these previous issues, not the current issue.
That's not
Exactly. But with FF number 8, we get back, the spotlight comes back to the main event, and I like all the FF's villains are now part of the Future Foundation, and they've got color coordinated costumes, which is awesome.
And then Doom's in a white cloak.
Yeah, and then they go off to the point of conflict, and they're in the dark versions of the costumes. Love that. Like, it was.
What's the deal with Reed's dad?
I don't know, but it's great because
is that a Beetle costume? What's going on?
Well, because what's great is that so Sue Storm or Susan Richards and Reed's dad are having a conversation, and as he's prepping for the battle, and he presses a button, and all of a sudden, this gallant costume with collars and things. Like, it was just like, what is this?
Awesome.
Oh, it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, Steve Epting's, and even Steve Epting, yeah, kind of looks a little photorealistic here, but I don't know. It doesn't bother me. I like it because it feels like kind of really classic to me.
I don't understand why the way you're using.
All right.
I feel like it's Princess Bride. It's like, I don't think that means what you think it means.
Yeah. It's not photorealistic.
I think we need to ban, like you banned awesome. I think you need to ban photorealistic from your descriptions. Man, I love the black and white costumes.
Yeah. No, this is the story that Hickman's meant to write, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, his Fantastic Four is better than anything I've read in a long time.
Yeah. I just love El Diablo in the black and white costume.
This is the best Fantastic Four that we've seen
in a while.
Maybe.
Yeah.
In a real long time.
Since Wade, at least. Yeah.
I love that the villains just went with the costume changes.
Yeah, I know. And what's great is that it looks like Spider-Man, he led it because he's like, he was at least I got them wear in the costume.
You got to all wear black and white costumes.
I really liked how, I really liked the moment when Medusa showed up and your presence has been requested. No, I don't. Boop, you're gone.
Yeah.
Because when Lockjaw wants you to go somewhere.
Yep.
You're going to that place,
and what's great is that the villains being involved, like you know they're behaving like previously up to this, you'd find it a little preposterous that these people who had a beef with Reed Richards and with the Fantastic Four would not come together and to work towards a solution, whatever. And in this issue, you start to see their true colors come out, which is, you know, as realistic as you'd expect. So that was good. So it was, you know, it made sense. And this, I mean, and then also you get Valeria, on lockdown, and then her brother breaks her out, which is awesome. I love the kids, and I love that
there's
only
too many, though. I can't keep track of them,
and they're only glimpses of the kids, though.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. That's because you know it's building up towards something good. So,
I like that Valeria is actually drawn to look like a little girl.
Yes, yeah.
Like she's like a little doughy and a little stubby, and she just looks like a little kid, and that never gets done correctly. In fact, that's the page that I was looking at when I said photorealistic, because it looked very real to me. So maybe that's that's impressive. Is my point.
Yeah. So was I the only person who picked up Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1 from IDW?
Of course.
Meant to.
Oh yeah.
Of course not.
Oh, you got it.
Of course.
Awesome. What'd you think?
The fucking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's tough because I do have the old original books here.
Yep.
And I do often look through them, so. You know,
have you read them?
Yeah,
like recently at all?
I read them
any
a couple
good?
Months ago.
I don't know if I'd want to read them. I love the way they look, and I love the idea of them.
I love that it was originally a parody of Daredevil.
Yes,
that's great.
That's so obvious now, and I'd never heard that until recently. But like,
oh yeah,
of course. Look at it.
The foot versus the hand, and
it's even in the beginning of the story. The same canister that blinds Daredevil creates the turtles. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it. I loved the way they drew action. The way the artist drew action. Who is
the opening fight against Black Sad was awesome.
Dan Duncan. I love the way that thing sort of telescoped, or when like the weapon sort of bent, and as they came towards you in the panel, that was really fun. I just missed the old kind of rough style of the original books, which I really liked in the old series. But I don't think they're completely changing the origin, which I think is fine.
Yeah. Well,
it's not canon. They changed it for the TV show, and then they did it for the movie. I mean, how many times are you gonna jerk us fans around?
I mean, I think it had the right elements of what I remember from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to something that I would be believable now. You know, there's a little nod to the camera when Raphael's dumpster diving and finds a T-shirt that says Cowabunga and goes, "Nah, that's just wrong," and throws it away. Yeah, so there's a little nod to what has become, what has passed. But if you never read Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic, you could pick this up, and I think you would enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Well, that's the question. Like, would you guys keep reading this if there wasn't a nostalgic link?
Probably. I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't see why not. I mean, I like Eastman as a creator.
I could ask that about almost any comic on the stands today.
Yeah, true. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's hard to take that away.
Well, this one's specific because we're all the exact age that, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was like the thing when we were younger. Although we were just coming out of...
it was the thing. I mean,
it was a thing.
I had all the toys and the cartoon every day after school. It was the thing. I would. It's fun. It's fun action. It's fun action with really good art. I happen to prefer the old style, but it was fun. I'm absolutely would continue to read this.
But I thought the look of the book, while it wasn't the old style, it didn't feel completely disconnected for me.
No, it's similar. Yeah. I just missed, like, if you look at one of the variant covers was by
Eastman.
And that's like the old kind of rough edges style that I really liked about the old Turtle book.
Yeah.
I always liked Laird more than Eastman, but
Eastman has the bitchin' locks.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he looks like a roadie.
Yeah.
They both have a lot of money. Is this the most successful indie book of all time?
Yes. Gotta be, I believe it is.
By far.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what isn't the most successful indie book of all time?
What's that?
Northlanders.
Well, it's not an indie book.
No, somewhat creator-owned. How's that?
It's a DC book.
Listen, if they had made Northlanders into a TV series with kids, toys, and cartoons, you know.
Yeah, true. I'm fine. Series.
Huge.
Anyway,
it's partially creator-owned. Anyway, it doesn't matter. This story is good.
It really is.
The thing is, we've talked about this before, and this is Brian Wood's final arc, 9-part arc to end the series, and it's basically seems like the coming of Iceland. And I had to remember once it started. I had to remember. Wait, does this have anything? I know this is part two, but does this have anything to do with the last story? And it didn't seem to directly. I don't know if it jumped forward.
Well, it had
in time.
A tie. I mean, it jumped ahead. Yeah, it definitely had a tie. It's a time jump, but it's definitely this is the main story that's being told.
Right, but if you remember at the end of the last one, it was like the girl had sort of taken over. She was going to fight for her, you know, for her thing, and not be. And I was like, oh, that was really interesting and fascinating. But if we time jump, then does that mean that was just part of this area or this family story? I don't remember what the name of the family in the last one was. And this isn't really a complaint. It just took me a minute to get into it. And one of the things that Brian Wood is very good at doing is focusing his story on a character who's kind of awful, but you don't realize he's awful for a little while because right away he does something that seems like it's sort of heroic and brave, and you're used to that being the hero of the story, and then you see what he does. And he's like, I think you should go now, Dad.
Yeah.
But you should go. I don't know if you know, I have this hot girl with me and I'm strong. You should go. Yeah. And literally, there's a line here that's like, haha, seriously, listen.
Yeah.
I think you should.
it's great though. I mean, it's a series I'm going to miss. I mean, it has never not delivered Northlanders. So
you're not wrong. You're not wrong. I left and came back to it. I have been very happy that I did. And you were about to say Paul Azzetta.
Yeah, it's great to see. You know, the last thing for Paul Azzetta that I saw was Spider-Man, and then to come over and do something like this that's so stylistically different, but still strong. And you know, as I said, is a good artist. So
you remember when this series first came out, and the whole thing was like whether it was okay for Vikings to talk like dudes now?
Yeah, nobody cares now.
No, now we've forgotten about it.
Because it's fantastic.
Yep. It is.
So what's also fantastic is being able to have a library of thousands of comics on your phone or on your tablet or on your computer and be able to read comics whenever you want in this new wonderful 21st century of digital world, digital comics. And you could do that with Graphically. iFanboy is a product of Graphically, and the Graphically HQ is constantly working on making digital comics better for you. We've got over 4,000 comics from over 250 publishers, but the main ones that you want and you're looking for, they are Marvel, Boom, Archaea, IDW, IDW, Dynamite, so many more that are out there. So if you're looking to try something new or want the comics that you're the same old comics you're used to, they're all there for you at Graphically. If you go to Graphically.com, you can find links to download the apps for your mobile devices, whether it's iOS like the iPhone or the iPad, or Android devices, Android phone or Android tablets. Keep an eye on this world because there's a lot of cool stuff coming, especially on the iPhone side of things, iPhone and iPad. So you definitely want to pay attention to that. And you can keep up on everything that Graphically is doing by following Graphically on Twitter at twitter.com/graphically. And the greatest thing is that if you buy a comic on your phone or on your tablet and go to the web, you can read it on the web. If you buy it on the web, you can go read it on your phone. It's versatile. Take your comics wherever you want it to. Great reading experience on the web through a browser at graphically.com. So go to graphically.com, check it all out. And it's some pretty cool stuff. We're pretty proud to be a part of it. So make sure you sample it when you get a moment. Thank you.
Oh, Ron, you know what wasn't good?
Sadly, the Justice League of America retroactive 1990s.
And it wasn't the story. The story is fine. I'll talk about that in a second. It was the fact that, and we haven't talked about this a lot. We've mentioned it kind of a bit, but not really dealing with the fact that these books have been badly printed, all of them.
Yes.
They've been really, really poorly printed, and this was the worst of them all by far.
Yep.
There was a couple of panels in here you couldn't even distinguish what was going on in them.
Yeah, it was really – and well, first off, well, even from away from the printing was when I think of Justice League in the 90s, I was like, give me some Howard Porter. Maybe we'll get a Grant-type story. We'll get some Zoriel or something like that, and they went earlier in the 90s, which disappointed – even though I always look forward to Maguire and Giffen and DeMatteis, but I felt like this is more 80s than 90s. Personally, for me,
yeah, it's a bit more 80s, but yeah. Grant Morrison's not writing JLA again.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the printing was an issue. The coloring was an issue. I mean, there was that full page when the guy becomes the demon and mm-hmm. the big Godzilla page. It was like Ultimate's muddy.
Well, right. there was a couple of like shots of ice that you couldn't make out. It was shockingly bad.
Yes, print. Yeah.
Shockingly you were showing me yours, and in comparison, the old stuff looked fantastic.
Yeah, the reprint looked great.
I was like, make it look like that. Just do it like that. It has to be easier.
Yeah.
Do that.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, story-wise, it was fine. This was they've come back for these, you know, a few times. This is actually, I thought, one of the better ones. But I wonder if this is the last one because it says together again for the last time. And then at the end it says
we hope.
But then at the end it says, that's all, folks. Like, I don't think they would.
They do not want to do this anymore.
They don't want to do any more vaudeville.
Yeah, I don't think they want to do it all. But they do.
Vaudeville.
I don't think they wanted to do it for a while. But
they're
think...
the Eagles at this point, and they're just out there, and people are like, "Play Hotel California again," and they're like, "All right."
They're still great at it, though. They're still
great at it. Yeah. It was a fun story. It was the Injustice Gang was in it, and it was a lot.
Freebird.
You got some Ted Kord, Blue Beetle. It was really fun. I thought it wasn't as. Actually, this felt more like a issue from that time than the other reunions have felt.
Yes,
like.
Yeah, I agree to that. Yeah.
So story wise, it was great. It was just awfully printed, and the colors were really not good.
Yeah.
So this was a disappointment.
So now, conversely, did you pick up the other book?
Superman.
No, Green Lantern.
Superman.
So DC
Superman was written by Wheezy.
Was it? Was it good?
Yes. Yeah, it was really good, actually.
Okay. Well, DC retroactive 1990s Green Lantern was focused on the later 90s, and it was Ron Mars and Dower Banks, who were the guys who created Kyle Rayner, and it was a Kyle Rayner Green Lantern story, and this is my pick of the week.
I didn't see it on the shelf.
Awesome.
So empty spot on the shelf where this would have been.
This Connor's irrational displeasure for Kyle Rayner aside, this is a case where the printing on the crappier paper worked because it felt like 1997.
I love those comics.
Right. And no joke, if you flip between the older story that they reprinted and this one, it looks almost exactly like this is.
That's what you want.
And Daryl Banks' art was great. Ron Mars.
He was always really good, Daryl Banks.
Ron Mars' story was great. I mean, this felt like this was an issue of Green Lantern that I missed. And that's what this retroactive should feel like. It feel like an in-between issue or something like that. It was a great Green Lantern versus Effigy story. And I think Daryl Banks is one of the few, and with Kyle Rayner, this admittedly, I'm emotional because this is what got me into Green Lantern. My first Green Lantern was Kyle Rayner that I actively read all the time. And creative use of the ring and the constructs, and you know, the every time Kyle used his ring, it was like, ooh, what is he doing here? And it was like very, you know, because Kyle was an artist and all stuff like that. It just reminded me how good this team was and how great of a job they did on this character, especially with, you know, crazy people like Heat and Connor hating him for irrational reasons. But It just
cannot hate tie me to Heat. You exist. Cannot tie me to Heat. There's no evidence that I was ever a member of Heat. If you found any evidence is manufactured.
I will find the link, Connor. You'll pay for your crimes. But
this is the Nazi war criminals of comics fans.
But seriously, this was great. I mean, no joke. This is my pick of the week, hands down.
You've had at least two DC retroactive picks of the week.
I have, haven't I? Yeah.
This whole event has become a much bigger thing than I thought at the beginning.
It was
tons
of fun.
It was, yeah. I want them to have a retroactive, like have one title that's just a retroactive, and they wrote like a one shot, you know, kind of thing. Do it every month. I'm there. If you can do it this well, it'll be great.
So, I've heard from several people lots of times that people are just sick of World War II Captain America stories. And to them, I would say, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. There's your next column.
Oh, there's the next column.
There you go. That's true. Captain America and Bucky number 621. More, please.
It's just great. It's great.
It's so great.
Yeah.
Bucky's shooting right at me on the cover.
It has that feel. It has a retro-y feel without being old-fashioned. It's totally modern storytelling, but with that, you know, they're all there. Cap's got his dimpled chin, and he's, yep, you know, big and blonde, and he wears the suit well, and he's, you know, it feels like you're watching an old movie done really, really well.
You know what this this reminds me of? This reminds me of conceptually the new Star Trek movie, and that this is better than it should be.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, like you take the premise, and this is what we're going to do, and you put Somni and Brubaker and Draco and Betty Breitweiser together, and the sum total is like, this might be one of the best things Marvel's putting out right now.
It's real good.
Yeah.
I like that Bucky is a complete wild card.
Yep.
Yep.
We have no idea what he's going to do. And you know, like, he's completely, like, got that boyish he's too full of himself. He's got too much confidence, and so
he's reckless, and this is his first mission as Bucky, reckless. And he goes out and he thinks he can take on anybody, and he gets stabbed in the leg, and he's forced to kill a guy, and that's the whole thing is about, you know, after first time
it was
a
train.
Someone.
It was a train load of clowns.
Yes, there was.
Also.
Yep.
And then one of the clowns had a dog or a rabbit bounce away from him at some point. I don't know why there were clowns on that train.
But there were.
There were a lot of them, though. There's a clown section on that train. Oh, you're going to be up in car 3.
Well, that was before
with the clowns.
Clowns had no rights before the 60s. They had to sit in the car. Water fountains in their own schools.
You're gonna be in clown 3 with the car 3 with the clowns.
It's steerage and then clown.
The horn.
Sad squeak.
Oh, that's great.
This is one of the best.
He busts into the train car and all this, like, squeak, squeak, squeak. No, you're staying here, clowns.
Because they can't talk. It's like squeaking squeaks.
The thing about clowns is you can fit like 6,000 in one car.
So you really make a profit on those clown cars.
Yeah. Clown smuggling was huge in the 40s.
Oh, God.
But thank you for the comic book, but also thank you for that, guys.
Exactly.
That book just keeps giving.
We talked earlier about DC's books that were clearly done. That's you'll find out more about that in a second. DC book clearly done to get them over and done with very fast before the reboot.
Yeah.
And that I didn't. Green Lantern Emerald Warriors 13 was another one of those books. I haven't been buying this series, but it was a team up between Batman and Guy Gardner, and written by Peter J. Tomasi. And I like how he writes both of them, so I picked it up. And it was a story that had nothing to do with anything. It was a one and done. About a murder on the International Space Station that Guy and Batman investigate. And it was drawn by Ron Frenz. Like, it was clearly just, we need an issue of Batman. We need an issue of Green Lantern.
We got to ship something.
Just put it out. Who can draw it in a month, in 2 weeks? Ron Frenz. He did it in the 80s. He can do it again now. Like, it was a fine story. It's just funny to watch these books end in different ways.
No meta commentary.
Not in this one. I probably enjoyed this one.
I kind of want to go back through the rest of the month of DC's books looking for meta commentary.
How about you find some?
I'm sure I would. I mean, because I don't read as many DC books. I'm sure they're there.
What do the clowns mean, though? So that's something.
Now, Josh, American Vampire 18 featured a surprising death.
Yes, it did. I don't. I think. I didn't see that coming to such the extent that I don't think that I realized it happened.
Who died?
Yes.
Like it did, but I don't know if it did.
Scott Snyder.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He killed himself. He stepped in like Stan Lee.
No, and, like Grant Morrison. No, the quote unquote main character, Skinner Sweet, is murdered in this, and he's one of the vampires.
Really? Yeah.
Well, I don't know about murdered. I guess kind of. It was a duel.
Murdered. I guess murdered implies some sort of. It was a fight, and he died in the fight. He was killed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So it was shocking because you know you're used to the main people hanging around. Even if he became a villain, he's still the main villain.
He had just a little bit of. You thought.
He had a little bit of Han Solo in him.
Yeah. Maybe he's not quite so bad.
That's
bad.
Kirkman levels twist there.
Yes.
Kirkman. Yeah, but you don't need him. The book is called American Vampire. It's not called anything else.
It's not called Skinner Sweet.
Scott said that at some point. I can't get over Rafael Albuquerque.
He's good.
I just love how he's so willing to just let the art be what it is. Like he's not trying to massage it too much. It's just so naturalistic, and I love it. There's a couple of hand-drawn sound effects in here too that just look wonderful.
Cool. You're saying he's not photorealistic.
He's definitely not.
Okay.
And I see some photorealism here. I don't know. All right, those are the books that we enjoyed. Photorealism.
Can we talk about the clowns?
Those are the clowns we enjoyed. Go to ifanboy.com/comics for the full list of comics that ship every week, and you do your pull list. And you can also set your pick of the week. And our top five picks of the weeks are brought to you by iFanboy. coming at number five is Uncanny X-Force number 13. 5.6% of you made it your pick of the week this week. At the time of recording, it might change when you hear this, so you know it's always fluctuating, especially with us. Number four is Wolverine number 14. Connor's pick of the week got 12.5% of the percentage of you, so only about 12% of you agree with Connor. There you go.
12% are smart.
Yeah. Number three was DC Retroactive the 90s Justice League of America with 12.9%. So nearly 13% of you got fooled by the teaming of Kevin Maguire and J.D. Mateus.
No, it was a good – if the printing had been different and the color wouldn't have been different, it would have been a great it was fine otherwise.
Right,
I
know. I'm teasing.
I guess they could read it.
It was very, very good.
13% of you have better eyesight than we do.
Yeah. Dark. You need a good light. Anyway, the number two book was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one with 20.7% of the pick of the weeks. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Do you think that's a retro pick or, you know, like
that's a nostalgia vote.
It's a nostalgia vote. Yeah, we'll see.
But again, they all are.
Yeah, true. Transformers.
Here it comes.
The number one pick of the week this week, according to you, the iFanboy community, was Captain America and Bucky number 621. 21.6% of you like clowns.
That's clearly the reason. I like that there's no clear winner this week.
Yeah.
But
yeah
it's all – there's no like 60% giant in the room.
In the
it's
mix.
All,
it's in the mix. So
I don't even – I'm glad I didn't have pick of the week. I don't even know what I would have said.
Yeah.
I haven't hit that button yet.
On to the reviews.
X-Man Ryan as of Uncanny X-Force number 13. And we can't tell you what the ratings are right now because it's a bit of a bug.
We're working on the bugs in the ratings. We're working on it for those of you who are worried about it, but it will be fixed soon.
It's a list. It's being worked through, people. Pick of the week percentage, 4.4%. Overall, this is a good read. I can feel the tension going on with the characters of the book as they try to save one of their own and at the same time survive in a realm that is different from theirs. Even though this book is a good read, I did have a particular issue with Wolverine. The top priority of X-Force is to save their teammate Warren. But Wolverine all of a sudden has second thoughts and wants to save the Age of Apocalypse reality from its demise. I feel Wolverine wanting to use the seed to stop Age of Apocalypse. Logan's chaos was a bit selfish. Is it just me who angrily feel this way?
Well, I think
it's a little hulkish at the end.
I think that's what Remender's doing. Like you're supposed to feel like he's showing that conflict.
Sometimes you're not supposed to like what the characters do.
Exactly,
that's the point of the story.
Yeah.
No, you're supposed to not like it. So that's the tension of the story. You're supposed to want him to do the right thing with it, but he's doing the thing. He wants to save Jean because there is a Jean, and that's where she is.
Yeah, exactly.
This
continues to deliver for me, especially as the X-Men fan. This is, you know, especially with that ending when they get back from Age of Apocalypse and they get, and boom, standing right there is Dark Angel with all of Apocalypse cronies, and they just basically walked into the trap. This has been great. It's been so good.
It's a trap.
It's been so good. All right. Our next review comes from Amir Cat, who reviewed Zombie number 6. Amir Cat has to say about Zombie: I'm kind of glad this comic is ending. No, it's not because I didn't like it. I loved it. The writing in this final issue is as creepy as ever, and the art is the main reason I ended up buying the whole run. But the thing is, I don't think I would have bought the next run with the same team if it had come out. I'm almost exhausted with the weirdness of this issue, and Irving is one of my favorite artists, but one of the reasons I love comics of this variety.
This series, I think we all slept on. I picked. I read all 6 issues. I read the first 4 together, then I picked up 5 and 6 as they came out, and he's right. It's weird, but in that bizarre, fun, totally wacky, weird way where there's an army of nuns and there's all kinds of magic going on, and the Frazier Irving art is wonderful.
No, it's easy to say that from Marvel and DC, the two books that possibly have the best things going on, we missed the boat on, which was Zombie and Journey into Mystery. I haven't read either, but that's what I hear. That's the buzz. So,
what's the clown situation with those books, though?
No clowns, but there are nuns, and there are of bizarre robots and things that are.
Then again, by my logic, I should be a huge Spawn fan.
Yeah, true.
I'm not.
So those
are be a lot of clowns.
Those are the opinions you had. Go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can do your pull list and rate and review your books and do your pick of the week. And we're still working out the kinks on the new website, so please continue to be patient. We appreciate it. We should have an update early next week. So if you're curious about the state of ifanboy.com, stay tuned. We'll be giving you that. We'll give you the update.
Let's do a few emails, guys.
Let's do them.
Shall we?
Adam writes in and says, with all the high-end comic statues and busts that are out there, why isn't there no officially licensed fish tank statues of Marvel and DC water-friendly characters? To me, this makes perfect sense. If you were designing your tropical fish tank for your comic room, what would your underwater comic scene be? In case you're wondering, mine would be Aquaman sitting on his throne, pointing and laughing at Ocean Master, who's trying to hide behind a sunken pirate ship because he hates his uniform, while Aquaman is embroiled in a bloody battle with Black Manta over the treasure chest that opens every so often to let out bubbles. I'd put some fish in there, too.
Aqualad is fighting Black Manta.
Oh, I'm sorry, Aqualad. I was wondering how Aqualad is doing.
Don't ruin the scene.
Yeah.
is this a real question?
I think it is, because he put a lot of thought into his scene. And the thing is that, now here's my thought. There, as far as I know, there is no official licensed fish tank solution provider for your comic fan.
I'm not saying 100%, but I'm saying
we're pretty sure. That said, if you're in the fish tank in business, you might want to look into getting that license, because it sounds like you might be onto something.
Well, hold on, though. You need to develop the Venn diagram
of
fish
comic
tank enthusiasts and comic book savvy people.
Now, the thing is, I would never have thought to look into that crossover, but I bet you it's probably out there. I mean, people buy fish all the time.
They're both things that obsessive people do.
Are they really?
That are, you know.
I think you're painting fish.
Wow, that's a big brush to paint fish in their house.
Exactly.
You know what? I'm not afraid to like upset the fish lobby.
It's a photorealistic brush, though.
I feel like at a certain point, that's like real. if you're going to just half-ass the fish, then they're probably going to die. So the people who are really into it.
Yeah.
Like you got to get into it is what I'm saying.
People who, you know, feed the fish and clean the tank. It's not a lot of work. We had a fish when I was a kid. It wasn't.
I've never had a fish. It's
don't
too
have
much work.
One now.
Too much work. That said, if I had a fish tank, you could probably. There's nothing to say that you can't use the existing statues and busts and just put them in the tank,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, people do that all the time.
Or here's a thought: all those hero clicks, put them in the fish tank.
Ooh.
That said, mine would be, of course, it would be Namor themed. I would probably do a fish tank that's under Utopia.
I would just have the sentry tied up and
drowning, tied to a cinder block.
Yeah, and I would like sort of make him a little like more pale because he had asphyxiated.
Yeah, Connor, what's your?
I'd have a lot of clowns. Just the clown boat tipped over and a bunch of clowns are drowning.
Drowning clowns.
I would have all the clowns standing around the dead sentry, and they would have aspirators on, so they had like. The clowns had gotten together to rid the world.
And they do the bubble. The bubbles come up from there.
And they're vicious. And then just one of them honks a little.
Oh, this is a good idea. Maybe we should get into the fish tank game.
I'm telling you, the fish tank. I think there's something here. I think Adam is onto something.
Officially, I fanboy produced some DC licensed Aquaman fish tank materials.
There you go. And Namor. Don't forget Namor.
And they cost $1,000 because there's only 5 of them.
All right, on to our next email, although I don't think you're going to beat Adams. Daryl from Chandler, Arizona, also known as Chop360 on the site.
It's not that Daryl.
Not that Daryl. No, no. This is Chop 360 on iFanboy.com. Daryl says, with the closing of Arizona's biggest comic retailer chain, Atomic Comics, do you guys feel like this is an early warning sign of what the near future holds for retailers? Doesn't this remind you of what happened in the music industry? Can someone say Tower Records? Listen, Atomic Comics was an established chain. It was no Tower Records, all right? Let's not
listen. Listen, I know Atomic Comics.
I knew Tower Records.
No, wait. I knew Tower Records. Damn it.
I mean, it's sad that they went out of business, but
it was four stores in a regional chain. It wasn't like a world, you know, worldwide.
It wasn't like McDonald's going under or anything.
And we don't know anything about their business practices that caused that.
From what I've heard and read and everything, it came as a complete shock and surprise to everyone. And Mike Malvy, who runs Atomic Comics, filed for bankruptcy. It sounds like he did a very good job of not revealing what kind of situation he was in terms of managing his business and his finances. So, you know, which is that's what happens. I don't know if it's indicative of the industry and what's happening to retailers or what Malvy did while in running Atomic Comics.
And there's no doubt that if you're running a comic shop, this is a rough time for it. You know. Yeah.
I really like, and I don't really like a comic store. When any store closes, it's bad.
Yes,
and there's so few of them, it's not good. But we don't know why. It could have been for any number of reasons why the store closed.
Yeah, and the thing is that you got to look at it. He had four stores. Why didn't he close one? And that, you know, and put all his resources into his main one or anything like that. I think there's a lot of stuff that we don't know about. We probably will never know about because it's his business.
We don't know what, if anything, this has to do with global warming.
Right, exactly. Or the clowns.
What's the clown situation have to do with this?
Yes, because the clowns in Phoenix, you know, you heard about the clowns in Phoenix.
Well, it's hard to be a clown in Phoenix. Exactly. Your makeup runs for one thing.
Right, exactly. So they could, you know, they could be involved. But
squeaking is way off.
But I really hope we don't look back on us saying this and you know, eat our words. But I don't think this is an indicator. I don't. So
I mean, we could be wrong. But if it is, then we'll start seeing more. Yeah. I mean, that's the only way to tell.
And that's the thing. I mean, and like everything from what I heard, you know, the service there wasn't that great. Like I heard other people started shopping at other stores. There could be all these different factors going into it. So.
The clowns.
So, all right. Our last email, Josh.
Yes. I really like the Earth X graphic. I'm sorry, Mike G. I really like the Earth X graphic novel and was wondering how you guys felt about it. Also, I haven't read Universe X or Paradise X yet. Do you have any thoughts about these stories?
Oh, this is like baiting. This is just easy baiting.
Before you get into your thing, I only read Earth X.
Yep.
And I don't remember loving the story, but I do remember loving the John Paul Leon art.
John Paul Leon.
Yeah, the art was great. Well, first off, there are no clowns in it, so that's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, I was so excited for this because it was Alex Ross and he's going to do Kingdom Come in Marvel. And I got
somehow involved.
And I got so into the character designs and, oh, look, Peter Parker's a cop and he's fat and Wolverine's fat. Everybody's fat in the Marvel Universe. I just realized in the future they all just get fat.
He was married to Jean, too.
Which is very realistic. It goes akin to the Marvel realism. But it just didn't deliver for me at all. So Alex Ross, I guess, did the covers and did the concepts and worked, and Jim Kruger wrote it. And it just became this really drawn out, future that I didn't like. I just didn't like
it. This was supposed to be sort of the Marvel answer to the Kingdom Come world that he created, which was the answer to Marvel's, oddly enough.
Yeah. You know what was missing from the formula?
What?
Mark Waid.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or Kurt Busiek. Like Jim Kruger was neither.
I remember the first one was kind of all right, and then I remember I bought like the first issue of Universe X, and just went, I don't care. I don't want to.
I didn't read Paradise X. I mean, I did. It got very lofty, and it just it. I don't know. I didn't like it, but the art was really pretty. So,
I mean, I think it's fairly easy to say that now, however many years later, no one is really talking about it in terms of its
importance.
That's a good bellwether. You know, the stories that are 10, 12, 20 years on that people are still sort of bringing up now and then, that's something. But
this
one
happened. It just kind of happened.
Yep.
Yeah. So. All right. So if you have any questions, you can shoot us an email at contact@ifanboy.com. If you are a representative of the Clown Union, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com to lodge a complaint. On to our voicemail. So our first voicemail comes from somebody who's having a little hard time with his comics.
Hey, guys. Dave in D.C. Looking over my stack this week and just feeling a little burnt out about comics in general. I don't know. I feel like it's kind of a lot of the same superhero kind of genre stuff, and love sequential art and love picking up my weekly books and stuff. But I'm wondering if it's not a little bit exclusionary and exclusive. If you haven't read, you know, the past 16 issues of Avengers, then, you know, maybe you're not going to jump on. And I'm wondering if you guys think that there's going to be some sort of I'm waiting for some sort of next stage in the evolution of comics, you know, and I'm wondering if it won't be superheroes. Just wondered what your thoughts were on it, and yeah, looking forward to hearing what you say. See you.
Well, first of all, you got to step away from fear itself. That's the first thing you want to do.
This is one of the most frustrating kind of emails or voicemails or whatever we get, you know, sentiments that we get. It's,
yeah.
The idea that you can't read these books unless you've read them all is ridiculous.
Yep.
It's ridiculous.
I certainly have read them all.
You can read. You can read them. You can start reading Avengers right now, not having read the first however many issues. You can do it.
Yeah.
You're a smart person. I feel like comic fans don't give themselves enough credit.
I agree.
That's a very nice way of putting it. I certainly wouldn't have put it that nicely.
No, I mean, I think that's the case. I mean,
You're right.
I feel like everyone's underestimating their own ability to understand what's going on. It's so basic. You can. It's not like it's. You. But it's not. They're not reinventing the rules.
Or the ability to not know something and still be able to glean value out of it.
Like, and enjoy it.
You know, or you'll figure it out later. There's context. It's if you're watching the beginning of a movie and you're like, well, who's that guy? Well, they're going
to
tell us.
Yeah, well, that's like, I mean, it goes back to, you know, and I wonder if, you know, because he's talking about, you know, the comics aren't accessible and he's thinking more as an industry wide, but like he's saying he's a little burned out on his comics, but he didn't actually say, I don't know what's going on. I don't get it. You know, he's thinking more in a bigger picture. But if you think about a book that's like, you know, something like Chew from Image, like they play with the fact that you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Whenever I don't know what's going on in Chew, I realize that I'm not supposed to yet.
Exactly. And that's part of the fun. And for me, part of the fun in comics is having stuff get revealed or going back or talking to somebody and finding out what that was and what that means. I mean, Connor, I mean, you and I, with DC stuff, like recently we were reading some DC comics and I was like, who's that? Who's that? You know, like ask questions.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of the enjoyment for me, at least.
The current pervasive attitude is you have to have read everything and you have to know everything that's going on.
Which you can't.
At all times, and you can't. Not even no one does. I don't know.
Look at me.
Every DC book.
I don't know anything.
Josh is generally clueless about everything.
Mostly clueless. Yes. Yeah.
And this is my job. So you know you're fine. The other thing I want to, and there was a letter almost exactly like this. And the thing I want to focus on a little bit is that you specified superhero comics. You don't have to read superhero comics. Yeah. There are other comics.
There's so many other comics out there in the world.
From you know. Marvel and DC, to a certain extent, there are books that aren't necessarily superhero comics. The whole relaunch is happening, but
well, it's
the
funny
new DC books are going in all sorts of genres that weren't there before. There's Vertigo, there's Icon, there's that weird tennis book. Not that you should read that.
But even – I have more information on that, by the way.
30 Love.
But even on their other comics, if you go back, I just recently talked to Rick Remender in a Talk Explode, and we were talking about Strange Girl, a book that he put out a couple years ago, and then we were talking about his Marvel work. And you know, we've talked a lot about Fear Agent and Rick's work and things like that, but Rick made a great point that people who read his X-Force and Venom stuff don't know that his independent stuff exists because – and he said it. He's like, people think that buying comics from Marvel and DC that are in the top 100 as opposed to the top 25 is helping out indie comics. When there's so many other publishers out there and so much other stuff out there and so many genres and so many different types of comics that you could totally discover what, you know, something else that you don't even know exists, you know? So
some other kind of new kind of comic.
Some kind of new comic,
yeah,
exactly. So,
but there's just a ton out there. And we talk, like, the thing is, the three of us are rabid for finding other books. Not that we don't like superhero books. That's not the point.
No,
but to also see other great things that can happen with comics that you can do with the medium that isn't that one genre. And we talk about them every week. So it's not as if you don't – if you listen to the show, you've been exposed to them. You just didn't go get them.
Yep.
And you might not like all of them. You have to take a little bit of risk.
There's always risk involved. There's the other idea is everything has to be a sure thing.
Yeah.
And that if you try something new and you hate it, and then there's a failure of everything.
And if you're hesitant to take a risk, you're hesitant to spend your money, look online for where things are posted, previews are posted. Go to the library, try checking something out for free. There's so many different. Go to the comic store and flip through. I mean, some stores now you can browse and flip through, see if it's the right thing for you or not. I mean, just take a risk. I know the feeling. I know that burnt out feeling, and I kind of know. I feel like I know where it's coming from. Where it's like, just read this all. Especially us with the amount of stuff we read. That's why. But our answer is to go find new cool stuff.
You know? Or and this also works, go read your favorite story again. I mean, like, if you loved Watchmen but you haven't read it for 2-3 years, I'm telling you, that will kick you in the pants.
Yep.
you know, or whatever book it is that you love. Go, you know, read through Preacher again or something like that. Or if you've never read through it,
kick you with big clown shoes in the pants.
I'm telling you, if you've never read Preacher, you go read Preacher.
Yep.
And you'll be like, man, comics are awesome.
Yep, totally.
Said awesome.
Cool. So if you have any questions or if you need us to talk you through any crises, personal crises, you can email, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. We are here to help.
We're listening. So next week is episode 300, if you've been paying attention to the numbers we talked about at the beginning of the show. And normally for the big 100 episodes, we get together and we do a live show. We did that for 200 and we did it for 100. But this year, we're not going to be together because, as you can tell, we hate each other.
Yes.
Just no longer be in the same room. No, we just schedules didn't work out and we're not around together. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a virtual live show. We're going to go on Ustream next week on Friday. And the date of that is something we don't know.
It is September 2nd.
All right, so September 2nd on that's Friday at evening sometime. We're gonna go to
ifanboy.com and or twitter.com/ifanboy. We'll post the exact time when it's starting and all that stuff so you can go gather. Yep. But it's probably gonna be for Eastern people. It's gonna be later in the day.
Yeah.
Yes. Western people earlier in the day.
So. Go to ifanboy.com and look for the Buzzable Bar. There'll be our post up there about it, and we'll be up there. We'll do the live show on Ustream, and then afterwards we'll hang around for a little while and take some questions and just a chat, and that's how we'll celebrate our 300th episode. So if you enjoyed that in the past, you can check it out. If you don't live in the New York area and you haven't been able to come to these live shows, now you can through the virtual magic of the internet.
Yes. We want everyone to be a big party, so if you can make it, it'd be great to see you virtually.
Come do it. Josh won't be wearing pants.
Yes.
if I wouldn't be able to tell.
Josh is going to be Ryan the Sibian. So it's going to be exciting.
Oh, wow. Wow. That is about as far as a train full of World War II clowns as you can get, just conceptually. So good work on that, Ron.
Jesus.
Go ahead and do the next part of the script you're supposed to do now.
I don't know where that came from. So so we also do a podcast called...
We all know what he's talking about, too. That's the sad part. Well, we all know what Bang Bus is.
So we do another podcast called iFanboy Don't Miss. Last week I talked to Jonathan Hickman about the Ultimates. You can hear, if you're interested in the Ultimates, you can hear some of what Jonathan had to say about what went into writing it, what he's got planned for the title. Pretty exciting stuff. Go subscribe to it. It's a short 15-minute podcast where we talk to creators about books that you definitely want to check out. We're lining up some great stuff this September. If you have any idea of what's coming in September, you probably have a clue as to what we'll be lining up, so you don't want to miss any of it. So don't miss iFanboy Don't Miss. Subscribe to it on iTunes.
Fine, and then you will go and check out ifanboy.com. You can read the Pick of the Week review that Connor wrote. You can read the book of the month is a great way to try something new. There's one that's up there before, and there's going to be a new one very soon.
It's not me. Who says get to the next book of the month, Connor?
Yes, I do.
I love that moment. Shit, am I supposed to do it? Is that now? Because there's nothing better than the moment that you publish your book of the month.
Yeah, no, it's true.
The longest amount of time between when you have to do it again.
Yep.
Anyway, all sorts of comic book discussion, things that are going up on the site. We've got you got previews coming in for you, stuff that you're not going to see anywhere else. We got, if you pre-order, we got solicitation information. We got opinion pieces. We have it all.
We got a little bit of everything.
We really do. We try very hard to do that. The website's very important to us. We put a ton of work into it. So get over there. Plus, you can listen to the Word Balloon podcast where John is going for the land record for long shows. But they're not bad shows, so that's fine. And go to ifanboy.com. I'm going to stop reading that part because the link's not the same. But if you click the little thing this is about, that will teach you things.
I can make it there. I can change it back to that. Do we want to change it back to that?
We might want to do that. Right, that way. That. Okay. We don't have to change the script.
Yeah.
Also, you'll find the video show. Last week, we talked about the JSA. Moment of silence. And then next week, we don't know. What do you mean? Well, because a thing might happen.
Well, we have one show planned, but another show could squeak in. We're not sure yet.
We've got an opportunity.
There's a show on Wednesday. What it'll be about? It's going to be a surprise.
Sibian.
To all of us.
It's just me on a Sibian. But I don't know how to use it. It's not dirty. It's just like me, just like, what is this? This is uncomfortable.
As I said earlier, if you have any questions or any personal crises or need fashion tips or anything like that, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. Should we take any episode 300 stuff, like post-show questions? Or
why don't you go to the website when it's time?
Yeah, okay.
That.
Look, maybe we'll be doing that. So there you go.
And finally, if you like the show, write a review on iTunes. That helps people find what shows they're looking for about comics. And they know this one's a good one if you write a review and tell them it is. So do that, please. It helps, and we appreciate it.
Clowns just have a high buzzable quotient.
iFanboy.com/about. Now you can find all of everybody who works for the site, as well as our social network links. It's all there at the old URL. That's how quickly it happens.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just now you did that?
Just now. All done.
Man, so. That's amazing.
All right. Well, one episode to go before we cross that 300 mark. Like Lee Smith. There you go, for you baseball fans.
So next week we'll see you live on the internet.
Yes. So until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm going to get good and greased up.
Oh, no.
There's no solution. It's part of evolution. The pitter-patter of souls. The little feet of tadpoles. There's no limitation to mixing and matching. Some get an itching for a critter they've been scratching. A skunk was badgered, the results were strong. And I hope that something better, I hope that something better, yeah, I hope that something better comes along.